This is Putting Numbers to Work from MetLife, where complex data from the benefits landscape is distilled into lessons employers can immediately put into action. Now here's your host, Marcus Smallwood.
Welcome back to the third season of Putting Numbers to Work, a podcast from MetLife, where we sit down with workplace experts to delve into the challenges facing the workforce today and distill them into lessons employers can put into action. Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Marcus Smallwood. And today on the show, we'll be sitting down with Cesar Carvalho, CEO of WellHub, a corporate well-being platform that serves as a one-stop shop for employees to connect with well-being solutions in the physical, mental, sleep, and nutritional verticals. We'll be discussing why prioritizing employees' well-being creates a better workplace at large, how to leverage new insights from MetLife's 2024 Employee Benefit Trends Study, and WellHub's research with thousands of HR professionals and millions of employees. So please join me now in welcoming Cesar Carvalho to the show. Welcome, Cesar.
Marcus, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. I am very excited to speak with you today. You have an inspiring story, and I thought that it would be really great by starting off with our listeners to give a little bit of background on you and then what sparked your passion in the well-being space and really what drove you to co-found WellHub, which our listeners might formally know as GymPass.
So the story is a deeply personal one to me. Here at WellHub, we want to help every single employee check in with their well-being every single day. And as you mentioned, it means exercising, sleeping, eating well, meditating, and thinking about mindfulness as well. And it's exactly what I didn't have 12 years ago when I started the business. I was working as a strategy consultant, and I was burning out fast, working long hours, checking into flights every single day, checking into different hotels, and I was not checking in at all with my own well-being. And I almost lost some important connections with my family, my friends, and I was considering quitting my job back then. And at that time, taking care of my well-being was complex, expensive, time-consuming. There were so many offerings out there. I was seeing videos on Facebook, YouTube about different strategies people had, different coaches on different things. And if anything, the complexity got worse these days. And it wasn't working back then. And then my idea was, what if there was a way to bundle all these services, fitness, nutrition, sleep support, in one single subscription? And what if we could make that subscription be way more accessible for everyone so they can check in with their well-being every day and they can mix and match different partners, they can try different solutions and see what works for them? That was the story. And we later found out that it would make a ton of sense to go through companies and offer this as a benefit to their employees, essentially because companies are the best possible allies in this journey because they also benefit a lot from having their employees being in a great state of well-being. And I know I described what it used to be in 2012 when I started the business, but today we connect employees with the best partners in all these verticals worldwide. We have more than 15,000 corporate clients that are offering this to their employees, including Amazon, Verizon. And we have almost 3 million active employees using the different partners every single month. It started with a personal journey. It became a product that can be accessible to every single one. We're launching one company at a time and still pursuing this mission of bringing well-being to everyone and helping everyone check in with their well-being every day.
Wow. I absolutely love it, Cesar. And I just want to say thank you for your passion and your commitment in this space. And you're truly making a difference. And 3 million active subscribers. That's amazing. You know, today I'm looking forward to diving into the latest findings from our MetLife Annual Benefit Trend Study, which explores the latest trends in workforce dynamics and employer-employee relationships. But before we dive into our findings, I think it's really interesting how the WellHub 2024 Workplace Wellness Report found that almost, I believe it was 93% of employees surveyed said that well-being was just as important as their salary. That's huge. So what does workplace well-being mean to you? And what trends have you seen in recent years that may be driving this?
Sure. So well-being is all about being fulfilled, healthy, and productive at work. And the manifestation of it comes in multiple ways. But I think the most important ways in which I see when someone has a great well-being at work is they have flexibility and autonomy. They have a purpose. They're working for something bigger than themselves. Peer relationships are great. And you can see as a professional, progression, development. You can see you're getting better and better over time. And what I really like to focus on is what are the core fundamental things that needs to be in place for these things happen. And to me, they're all related to how we are as individuals and what is the well-being we have as people. And I'm talking here about for both leaders and frontline employees or more junior employees. And the basic is access to physical activity, sleeping well, eating well, practicing mindfulness, and being at a great state of financial health as well. So that is not a big concern. And if those founding blocks are there, it's way easier to build all the other solutions that are going to lead to a great well-being at work. And you mentioned a very, very important stat that really, really went up the appreciation of employees for well-being after the pandemic. And what we have seen is way higher expectations of employees, higher expectations in terms of what I need and want, and higher expectations on what the role of my employer should be. The good news is that employers are seeing return in the investments that they're making on the well-being of their employees, and those returns are positive, more than justifying the investments made. And the good news then, when we hit this point, is it's something that is just better the more it grows. The more employee well-being is out there, the more companies are embracing this trend, the better it gets, more lives are going to be impacted in a positive way, and people are going to be more fulfilled, healthier, and more productive at work.
I love that. Yeah. And I think they'll be happier at work too, which is a big thing. And also, I think it'll drive more loyalty when their employer truly shows that they care about their personal well-being and their holistic health. So Cesar, let's dive into the 2024 Employee Benefits Trend Study and the report and its findings. It's clear that for many workers, workplace well-being has become a non-negotiable part of the employee experience. But as we know, there are many different facets of what makes up an employee's well-being or holistic health. Specifically, we examine employees' physical, mental, social, and financial health to get a pulse on how well employees are currently feeling. Now, the report found that while all of these areas are trending upwards year over year, only 44% of employees say they feel holistically healthy. What factors do you think might be driving this?
Look, it's very concerning. And the fact that less than half of the employees don't feel holistically well, despite all these trends that we talked about and companies seeing the return on this investment, is shocking. And to me, it's a call for action. And it's one of the things I'm passionate about. I know you are as well. Everyone at MetLife is. So my view is that there's no silver bullet for being well. It comes down to taking care of yourself across all the dimensions of well-being. And what I like to say is it's like a flywheel here in which one positive thing reinforces the other in a way that helps the other. For example, if you're exercising, it's way easier to sleep well. And if you created a habit of exercising and sleeping well, you're going to be more resilient and have better emotional health at work. And you're going to be more motivated to eat well as well and have a good diet to support that lifestyle. And if you're eating well, you're going to have more energy to continue that journey of sleeping well, exercising, etc. Unfortunately, the other side of the equation is also true. If one of those aspects is not working, then it becomes harder and harder to get the other aspects in the right place. And I think that's what's going on right now. And this is why, as you say, holistic health, and by the way, I support that concept. It's really, really important. Holistic health is so important because holistic health assumes that every single one of these aspects of well-being is reinforcing each other in a positive way. I speak a lot with our clients when they're asking about how to create better well-being programs, where all the employees have access to a spectrum of wellness resources, allowing them to explore those different options, finding something that works for them so that they can stick with it over time. And my push is to help people get access to all those resources in those different fronts, in those different verticals of well-being, so that they can find the combination that works for them and they can start seeing the positive cycle and the reinforcement of every single one of those verticals.
I just love that. It's true about you have to connect those dots and all of those matter. And if you take out one of those elements, you're doing everything else right, but you're not sleeping well. It's going to have an impact on you, or if you're not eating well. And so I love how you've connected those dots and showed how each of them have a significant value in our well-being. Within our last two employee benefit trend study reports, we've explored care as a business imperative and how feeling cared for at work is a key driver for employees' health and well-being. And in our 2024 study, we wanted to understand the moments where employees felt they needed more from their employer. And interestingly, almost 8 in 10 employees expect their employer to demonstrate care in their personal lives. So outside of work, these include moments such as significant unplanned financial stressors or ongoing mental health conditions. So Cesar, why might this be, and how can employees communicate these challenges to their employer?
Well, to start with, I think the employees are right to expect that type of care from their employers. It is the pure reality that our personal lives deeply impact how we come to work every day. And when thinking about the employees' well-being, we would be remiss to silo that definition just for the hours in between people clock in for work and clock out. And I've been talking a lot about this. I really think that this concept of work-life balance, that is, by the way, a 50-year-old term that's outdated completely, putting life at odds with your work, and as if one has to gain at the loss of the other and that they're constantly competing, I think that's completely misaligned with the reality today, where we spend most of our lives working and you can't detach. You can't clock out your life and clock in on your work and expect things to continue. So we all know it's not true. We all know these things exist together and they're integrated. And if your life is in order, if you're happy with what you're doing, et cetera, and you are at a great state of well-being, you will produce better results once you are doing things at work. But then the critical point is how to encourage employees to speak up more and how to enable leaders with the tools they need to be able to have those conversations with their employees. And to me, the critical component there, Marcus, is to help everyone build trust. And the role of leaders here is very important because they can create an environment in which people are comfortable with sharing with others how they're feeling in that specific week, how challenging their well-being is. And then by just having the leader or the HRBP or someone else in the organization hear those things and see if they can help or not, that counts a ton. And that really, really matters for people. One of the things we're doing here at WellHub, especially with my leadership team, is every single time, and we did it today before I joined this recording with you, when we seek to have a meeting once a week, we go through, before we start the meeting, on how everyone's doing. What is the plan for the week on the professional side and how we're doing on the personal side? And that's where people share and open up things that are bothering them or things that are concerning them. And most often, there is someone in that group that can help, that has some advice, that knows someone that can help. And just creating that culture in which it's okay to share. And once some information is shared, people respond and they genuinely want to work to help each other. And by the way, if we're helping each other, we're going to perform better as a team. We're going to trust each other more whenever someone is struggling with one topic or the other. And to me, employees should be encouraged to speak up. I think companies need to find ways, not only empower leaders to have those conversations, as I mentioned, but providing tools that can allow employees to give feedback, to ask questions in town halls, et cetera, so that these topics can be discussed.
I just love that best practice that you shared about opening up a meeting and understanding what's on tap for them in their personal lives, in their professional lives that week. How are things going? And I do think that that is a really good way to instill trust. And then also empathy, I think, too, because if you're seeing what is someone bringing today in that certain setting, someone in that meeting might be ready to pounce and attack. And then they start to really think, here's a human being that's on the other side of the table for me, and I should treat them differently.
And a comment there, Marcus, just to complement, is we did a research last year. We have 5,000 employees to assess their ability to have flexibility to deal with personal issues while at work, ability to take breaks and et cetera. And the translation of that is how much they are in control of their own well-being as employees. A very interesting disconnect we found is that normally leaders in the organizations, they have a way better control of their own well-being because they can control meetings, they can control the agendas of topics, etc. So they have way more control than more junior employees or frontline employees, which are many times joining meetings of other people. And their ability to eventually raise the hand and say no and share that they're stressed and etc. gets very diminished with that. So it's just another data point to emphasize how important creating that culture is, especially for more junior employees to be able to speak up and be heard. On the other hand, this would also give the leaders an opportunity to show how much they care, because I believe the leaders care.
I believe that too, especially ones that show by example and are showing what that means to them, and they're being vulnerable as well, can go a really long way for those junior associates as well. So getting even more specific into the 2024 EBTS data finds, it finds that fewer than two-thirds, so 63% of employees think that their employer demonstrates care for their specific circumstances, challenges, and needs. And in other words, employers facing pressure to meet demands for employee well-being, which requires a tailored approach to meet the full range of needs across the workforce. And this makes sense considering there are multiple facets of wellness that hold different priorities for each employee. So how can employers avoid this one-size-fits-all approach to their wellness initiatives and ensure each employee's unique needs are recognized and valued?
So to start with, I completely agree with the results of the research. It's amazing to see the data and to see the quantification of it. And the reality is that workplace well-being is deeply personal. It's like your fingerprint. It's your own. No one else has it. A couple of examples. In fitness, there are more than 1,000 different activities. And let's say you like yoga. Just within yoga, there are 50 different types of yoga. And the same is true for nutrition. The same is true for the different ways to meditate and how to meditate and etc. And even if you were really passionate about one single activity of one single type, there are trends that come and go in this space all the time. Like right now in fitness, everyone's talking about pickleball and etc. It used to be cycling before, and the next year is going to be something different. So not only your well-being is just yours, but there's a number of new things coming up. Just like the movies industry, there's a new blockbuster every year. There's a new thing coming up every time. And well-being is about trying those different things. It's about people figuring out what's their own journey and how do they get the best of all the different resources that are out there. And then putting the shoes of HR leaders who are thinking about these programs in an environment that is highly complex. There's so many solutions, and many of those solutions, they have very low retention rates. People try them and then they stop afterwards. I think the secret is picking a platform that can provide services to all this diverse set of needs, and a platform that can get better over time, that can keep adding more partners, that has that as their mantra, as their mindset. The platform needs to combine in-person and digital access, because digital access alone isn't going to make it. People crave for human connection. And we have seen in-person activities growing really fast this past years. And then when you need to consider the in-person part, you need to think of the geographical dispersion of employees, and employees are more geographically dispersed than ever. It needs to be a solutions at different price points. You can't have only a product that would cost $300 a month, because that would be available for just a small percentage of the workforce. Multiple price points are required, if possible, having at least a solution that's available to all employees for free. And there's this point of centralizing these different initiatives in a single platform, a single vendor, so that people have a clear go-to for a specific vertical. Multiple point solutions with different login methods are hard to communicate, are hard to be understood by the employees, and most often are forgotten after 2 weeks after there is a launch and there is an email. And we want to fight that. We want to push for benefits that have high participation at the beginning. But even more importantly is, how is participation and usage 6 months after, 12 months after, 2 years after that? And that should be always growing consistently.
Yeah. Wow. You had a lot of great insight in there. I loved how you shared with our listeners that our own well-being and employees' well-being should be treated like a fingerprint. We're all different. We are diverse. We have different needs and we're on a different path in our own journey. And to provide access in that way that focuses on the variety, the different cost points that you had mentioned, these are all things that, you know, employer really needs to think about and how can they do that and make it simple and easy for their employees. I think this is really great how you unpack that. Now, we've talked about a lot of great reasons why employers should care about employees' well-being. But while it may seem like common sense for us, there are still employers out there who aren't implementing these initiatives. So why should employers care about fostering employees' well-being among other organizational priorities?
Look, there are still companies out there that are not working on it, thinking of it. But the silver lining is that before the pandemic, a lot of companies could afford to do nothing. And they could say, we're not going to invest on this. We don't believe in what you're doing, that your life matters for your work and etc. I think after the pandemic, the number of companies not doing anything has reduced. Right now, I think the battle we are all fighting is for companies that are just checking the box and saying, we have something, and separating those from the companies that are really, really interested in promoting well-being to their employees and getting their employees to use the different tools and to get the results from it. And what we want is to push 100% of the companies to move in that direction. And the employees are noticing the difference already. It's not what you announce as a company. It is how many people appreciate that announcement and use those services constantly over time. And that to me is the lasting change here. And by the way, is the change that will drive ROI, will drive return to those investments. Because if people are not using or not engaging and they're not living well, happy, healthy, as you mentioned, the results are not going to show up. And I feel the most important agenda we are pushing as an organization is that many times companies, they describe themselves as being an AI company or being a software company or a technology company or a media company. And they define themselves as either the industry they work or the technology they use. But everyone knows that people are the most important asset of every organization. And we're pushing an agenda that every company needs to consider themselves a wellness company. Because if wellness is not there, nothing else is going to be. And companies should care about it because if they don't care, they're just going to lose the best talent and they're not going to be able to hire the best talent. The other aspect is, we just talked about how well-being is already perceived by the employees to be as important as their salary. If you don't embrace that as an organization, you're going to have to overpay every single employee and you're still going to lose them. And the worst part is not those two that I just mentioned, is that it's proven that if you are at a great state of well-being, if you are exercising, sleeping well, you're going to use your health plan less. And that has a massive impact at the bottom line of every single organization. So if you don't care, you're going to see your healthcare bill increase year over year. And you're going to have, as a leader of HR or a CEO, to have very tough conversations with your board because there will be pressure for more efficiency and your healthcare bill is going to increase over time. So I normally say that to drive sustainable change, you need push and pull. There is a pull from boards, from CEOs of organizations for efficiency. There is a pull for improvement in the bottom line. And there is already data showing the return on the investment of well-being. In fact, the majority of our clients, once they implement a solution like ours, they see that positive return. And there is pull from employees demanding that, sharing that this is really important. And the employers are feeling it. So what makes me confident, Mark, is we are in a good trajectory, is that those two forces are helping and change is happening.
That's just so great. And you've hit on this return of investment. And I think we'll wrap things up there. I could talk to you all day, Cesar, on this topic. It's super important and relevant for all of our listeners as well. But we are running out of time. So let's conclude with the main takeaways for our listeners. And you hit on return of investment, ROI, as well. But what are the last things that you think employers should prioritize as they look to invest in their employees in this wellness space? And how can they use benefits to help support this initiative?
So a couple of takeaways here. Employees are looking for more and employers are seeing positive results in terms of the return on that investment, as you mentioned. Another takeaway, there is a ton of value, if you are a company, in your caring for your employees' well-being. They're noticing it, and the results of MetLife's research is also showing that. And it's very important not to ignore it going forward. And there's also a comment on whenever you think of benefit offerings, that you should try as much as possible not to be prescriptive, not to think that you can identify what is the vendor or the solution that your company needs, because your employees live in different places. They are at different stages of their own well-being, different stages of life, and they might be facing a number of different issues that would make any one-size-fits-all offering not be very attractive, and therefore it would be a waste of time and resources to just work on this. What I've seen is that organizations that successfully bring platforms to their employees that address all the different well-being needs and that push for that positive cycle of reinforcement to take place, so that one good thing reinforces the other, are the organizations that are going to get the best results. And maybe the last takeaway is there's no other form of measuring the result of a given program of well-being that's not the participation of employees. How many people are using, and if that usage grows over time because the platform is getting better, or if the usage is shrinking over time because the platform is not culturally relevant anymore. There's a lot of noise in the space. It needs to come down to, are people more active? Are people sleeping better? Are people eating healthier? And are they checking in with their well-being every single day or not?
Wow. Cesar, thank you so much for joining us today. I have to tell you, I just want you to know, you're amazing. I am so grateful for all that you've done, your company is doing. You provide an amazing benefit. You're making a huge impact across the globe here. And so thank you so much. And I really enjoyed our conversation today.
Really enjoyed it as well. Thank you for the opportunity, and I look forward to staying in touch.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that's it for today's episode. Again, I want to say thank you so much to Cesar for joining us today to dive into the 2024 Employee Benefits Trend Study and to talk about the ROI of wellness initiatives. And thanks to all of you for listening today, and make sure that you're subscribed to Putting Numbers to Work. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review and tell us what you like. We'd love to hear from you. Again, I'm Marcus Smallwood, and this has been Putting Numbers to Work, presented by MetLife. So long, everybody.